until 11. You're listening to Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye, live from Torquay on 94.7 The Pulse.
And we're here at Cafe Moby until 11 o'clock. It's a great pleasure to welcome into our broadcast position Libby Coker. Libby, welcome back to the program.
Hey, good morning, Mitchell. Good to be here.
Yeah, no, it's very good to see you. Of course, we actually spoke quite a fair bit over the last year. I think you're in at least once a month. And I was just thinking the other day, it's been nearly been a year since that day that you came into the studio. And I think as you were walking in to do an interview with us, Malcolm Turnbull took over the leadership of the Liberal Party. It's been very interesting, hasn't it?
Yes, look, I was pre-selected to represent Corangamite for the Labor Party in March of 2015. So yeah, that has been a long journey, and I've learned a great deal along the way. Unfortunately, we didn't win Corangamite, but we made a considerable dent in the difference. We now have 3.1%, which I think is doable at the next election. I think that while we didn't win, we actually did push the policies, and those policies around the need to protect Medicare, about the need to protect health, about investment in education, schools and Gonski, in protecting universities from deregulation and hiking up of university fees, environment. These are the things that our communities find very important. And federally, I think Bill Shorten and our team did exceptionally well in pushing these values, these policies, and in the end, we virtually almost had a hung parliament. Mm. So I think we did very well, and I'm proud of what Labor achieved. And now we have to continue to keep the government to account, and we also need to ensure that all those promises that were made for Corangamite roll out.
Yeah, now I was listening to another radio station, and they seem to say that over the next 3 years, some in Labor are saying that they don't think Malcolm Turnbull will last the journey, just because it's a very fragile majority there, 76 seats in the lower house. In the upper house, it seems like it's going to be very difficult to get legislation through, just because if the Labor Party and the Greens want to vote something down, you then have to get Pauline Hanson and Nick Xenophon to both agree before anything can get passed.
So, yes.
Do you think Malcolm Turnbull will be still the leader in 2019 when we have our next election?
Oh, look, oh, for a crystal ball on that one.
Yes.
Look, I think that's very difficult to say. What is very clear is that this government is going to have a very difficult time. It's going to be a real tightrope walk for them. It was interesting at the G21 forum, Kerry O'Brien, the former 7:30 host, spoke, and one thing he did say is that the challenge will be getting good policy through, and it will not be influenced. Policy will not be influenced by people like the Pauline Hanson faction. Mm. I think an example of how difficult it is going to be is the plebiscite, for
yes.
example. I mean, already we're seeing that's highly unlikely that this is going to occur, which has lots of ramifications. I mean, personally, I believe that a vote in Parliament is the more sensible, more economic solution. We don't need to spend $160 million, in my opinion, and I think people elect ministers or members of Parliament to represent them. So I believe that we need a vote.
That said, the argument of the government was that the Labor Party took to the election the idea of having the free vote in the Parliament, and they said we're going to have a plebiscite, and they say we have a mandate. Does that hold water with you?
Well, I think it is a difficult one when it is such a close, it was so close. A mandate, it's something we can discuss, you know. I mean, I've heard some of the Liberal MPs saying that, yes, we won, so therefore we have a mandate. Mm. But on this issue, I feel that it is questionable. I think you can tell from the majority of people who are speaking out on this issue that there is a need to go to a vote.
Yeah.
That's what people want.
I mean, I saw on Sky News last night, Peter Credlin said the government won clearly. I don't think they won clearly. So, you know, to say that they overwhelmingly won and therefore there's a mandate is probably a different thing. But it's a question of whether 76 seats counts as a mandate. It's going to be a tough issue because I mean, I thought at least with the plebiscite, there was a chance that this issue was going to be resolved maybe in February when it went to a vote. But now it looks like we're going to be lining up for more squabbling and fighting between the different groups. And as you said, all these different crossbenches as well as the major parties as to what the best way forward is going to be.
See, the thing is with the plebiscite is it actually doesn't resolve the issue. Then you've got to put it to Parliament after that. So yeah. Why not just put it to Parliament?
Although you'd have to assume that like people that are elected would put their constituents' views first. So if you're personally, your personal views were against same-sex marriage, you would think that someone would say, well, the people in the plebiscite have voted overwhelmingly in favour of it, therefore I'm just going to put that to one side.
I don't think you can presume anything about some of those more right-wing thinking folk within the coalition government. I don't know if you can presume that. I would hope that that would be the case.
And just last of all, on federal issues before we move on to some of the other local issues, I mean, what's it like fighting that marginal seat campaign? It was such a long campaign. I noticed that on your schedule you were pretty much doing things from dawn every morning until dusk at night time. I mean, does it really wear you down doing that for over 8 weeks?
You know that that is going to be the case, so you're prepared for it. I think that you need to be really in good health through that period, look after yourself. I think one thing that people may not be aware of is the size of Corangamite and the distances you travel to, say, go to a debate in the evening while you've come from, you might go from Torquay, you might then to Ocean Grove and then down to Colac and then back to Geelong for various events, which might take in a debate, a media gathering, a meeting with constituents, a stakeholder gathering, door knocking. You know, there is a lot of direct contact with voters at that time, and it's really important that you do that. So it's grueling, but you really have to believe and be passionate in what you're doing. And I do continue to have that passion, and I think that that is what fuels you and keeps you going.
Is it frustrating to lose so much time sitting in a car, like you say, you know, the long drive to Colac and back to Geelong and back here again, when you feel like I could be out on the hustings, but instead we've just got to sit here in the car, not really doing that much?
Yeah, you do need to use your time wisely while you are in the car. It's a good time to contemplate. You'll have someone with you to assist you so that you can actually make some calls on the way. But it is partially around time management. But the most important thing is that you get your message out to constituents, and that is not easy to do when you're the candidate and not the incumbent. You don't, and also different media. I found the media to be on the whole very fair. But earlier in the campaign, it was difficult to get those issues out into the media that I thought were very important to people to hear about, whether it is relating to things like health or education, our position on environment, and importantly, about job creation.
It's an interesting point because at the moment some people are saying that Malcolm Turnbull has created a bit of a vacuum, you know, particularly when you look at the fact that they haven't sat in Parliament for about 4 months now and the Labor Party is doing a bit more of the agenda setting. And I think you even said the same thing when you were speaking as the candidate. You spoke about that, you know, Labor was setting the agenda, for example, on Medicare and the government wasn't doing enough in sort of developing their own policies. Do you think that is the case, that there's a bit of a vacuum and the opposition is filling it?
Yes, look, I do. I think Bill Shorten made a very good speech at the press club recently where he did put to the government that the issues of negative gearing and taxation are things that this government should consider, because there was a lot of support for our negative gearing proposal, which was going to raise significant revenue. And I think... Well, I think Labor wants to introduce policy that does not impact on those who will be hit hardest, you know, people in the lowest wage brackets, and create revenue in ways that we believe are fair. And that is our mantra. And I believe the Turnbull government would be wise to actually listen to some of those different policies and work together to achieve some outcomes that bring the people, all the people, along with us. Whether that happens, is... Yeah, we'll wait and see.
Now, you're at the G21 Stakeholder Forum, and I know because I was there for the whole 7 hours or something.
Yes, well done.
We were broadcasting the whole time, and we were up on a pedestal at the back of the room, so I could see that you were also there for the whole time, which I thought was impressive, given that some people were drifting in and out, you know, after the Premier spoke, they'd head off and all that type of thing. So what are your thoughts on having taken in that whole event? I mean, they started off talking federal with Kerry O'Brien, then it went state, then perhaps a little bit more local. Any big takeaways to you from that event?
I think that Kerry O'Brien spoke very well about the current situation of the federal government and the fact that Malcolm Turnbull has a brief window in which people will give him some, will have some generosity of spirit, but things need to happen, and things that are defining of their government, and give people hope that there is going to be things done of value in terms of budget, in terms of caring for those who are less well off, in terms of business. Yeah, so I think a lot of people will be waiting and watching, and it is going to be challenging. So he spoke very well on the federal arena. We also heard from our Premier, Daniel Andrews, who spoke about positioning our region for the future and the things that are being done in terms of new business cases for a convention centre, roads like the Barwon Heads Road, looking at the additional train service, not looking at, but introducing additional rail services for the Colac line. There is a lot of work that this government is doing, and I was really pleased today to hear the announcement about fracking, a permanent ban against fracking for the state of Victoria. I know and have already heard from people who are really thrilled about this outcome. I'm personally thrilled myself. As a former Surf Coast councillor, we have pushed for that. We've held forums, we've listened to people, and I'm very pleased that our government at state level has broken ground on this issue, and literally.
Yeah,
and,
that's true.
And really said no to fracking, which so many people for so long have opposed. For good reason.
Yeah. Well, I think it was going to be a tough sell for them to try and pass fracking or to say that we're going to make it legal. I'd be interested to see what the parliamentary inquiry has found when they put all that forward and see what has been done.
Yes, I agree. Look, one thing I have noted today is some of the unions have come out and are disappointed with the decision because of the jobs. Now, jobs for our region is really crucial. And I know that the Andrews government has plans for job creation, and we need to put a focus on that because obviously while I'm pleased about the decision with fracking, we also need to have job creation, particularly with Ford closing next month.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the jobs issue, you've got the economy, like the economic benefits of fracking, and also the energy mix question, you know, how much of your energy do you get from certain sources? So I suppose that's the other side of the argument,
isn't
it?
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, economically, Corangamite is not going well. We're in negative growth. It's not something that the incumbent wishes to speak about, but we are. And how do we change that?
What did you think of Matthew Guy's speech at the G21 Stakeholder Forum? Because he spoke about the issues of population growth and the infrastructure to cope with it. And I think that would resonate with quite a few people here on the Surf Coast when, for example, we see the population size of Torquay growing.
Matthew Guy was talking about planning, which obviously he was the planning minister when I was mayor at Surf
That's
Coast.
Right. Yep.
And we did have some argy-bargy in those years over Spring Creek, but we all move on. Now, I was interested to hear his take on planning and development. And really his focus in his speech was about regionalism and about the fact that cities cannot continue to grow and grow, our biggest city, say it's Melbourne, and that we need to look to our other regional centres to pick up. And I don't think that this is a new idea. I think that the Daniels Andrew government is is actually working towards a similar outcome. We do want Melbourne to continue to be the most livable city in the world, mm-hmm. and we want Geelong to have its share of economic growth and development. So we need to continue to bring WorkSafe, TAC, those sort of organisations out to regions, and we need to improve the infrastructure to get to A to B and make regional centres more attractive to come and live. And I think we are achieving that, but the infrastructure is always very costly, and that's challenging. So upgrading rail, for example, and it would be beautiful. I think the people of Torquay, for example, and all the way down the coast would be thrilled to see the rail corridor become a reality, whether it's light rail, which I think would be fantastic, but you know, there needs to be a lot more exploration around analysis around what we do. But we need better transport along the coast, particularly. I know for those who live down my way and further down to Apollo Bay, that stretch of coastline, the bus links are crying out for improvement, and to have rail to here would be brilliant. But that's also around population.
Yeah, and at the forum they also had that presentation on the Western Distributor Project. $5.5 billion, I think, was the cost, and going to be completed in 2022. I mean, it's very expensive, and it's going to take a lot of time to actually get there, but something needs to definitely be done, because I was driving down the other way yesterday morning, and I could see the gridlock that was there, about 10 or 15 k's of traffic just not moving going to Melbourne. So it's
very frustrating. I've sat in the Westgate car park myself many mornings, and it is a source of great frustration, and it reduces our productivity, but I think the Western Distributor is going to be a great outcome for Geelong, because we will benefit much sooner than, say, the East-West link. It is going to take trucks off the West Gate, which I think is very important, and create an alternative route. So it's a great investment. Looking forward to seeing it begin and help people from Geelong who do commute into Melbourne.
Now, you've decided to put your hand up and run for Surf Coast Shire once again, and you've got a bit of experience having been a former mayor, and you're running for Anglesey Ward.
That's correct. Look, it is something I've always loved. I've done this now for 8 years, and I've learned a great deal. I think I do have a lot to offer. I've worked hard for my communities. I think it's very important that you listen and that you respond and you act where you can. And I believe I've done that. And I also am proud of a lot of the decisions the Surf Coast has made. We have been a unified team, I believe, over the two terms I've been a councillor. And I think we've had some great mayors. The councillors have managed to work well together despite differences. And that has not been the case amongst other councils necessarily. And this is what we need, to have a balance of experience in council with newcomers. So I note that Eve Fisher is not going to stand again. I think she's been a great contributor, but that's her decision. But from what I gather, the other councillors are going to be, I think the majority will be standing again, which I'm pleased about, because I think we do have a unified team, and we've come out on a range of issues, whether it be no circus animals, no fracking, on those social issues. We've also made planning decisions. We did push for no development in Spring Creek. We've managed to save half of that valley. We're looking at, we've pushed for schools. We've actually achieved those outcomes. We're looking at arterial links. There's a lot of work still to be done, and I have the energy and enthusiasm to continue. Anglesey is a ward that obviously has included the Alcoa coal mine and power plant, and that is an issue which I'm watching closely. There is a meeting on October the 10th, which is a part of an ongoing discussion with the community about what they would like to see occur on that site. So that's something that I'm very keen to look at. We have our own issues in relation to the Ocean Road and how it weaves along our section of coast and impacts on townships and congestion in tourism, times of high tourism, peak tourism season. So that's That's another issue, and transport is an ongoing issue as well.
And are you running as a Labor councillor? Because obviously some people have different opinions about party politics in council. On one hand, obviously, it's good to know where people stand before you vote for them.
Yep.
On the other hand, people say, oh, they're just running for their party and it's party politics and all that sort of thing. Where do you stand on that?
As a councillor, I'll be running as an independent person. I don't believe that as a councillor you should be voting on party lines. As a councillor, I vote for the people. I vote for what I believe will serve my community best, and I will always do that, always have done that. Obviously, I wasn't overt in my political leanings for the majority of my time. People know how I vote, but I will always vote in line with the best for my community.
Now, just a couple of these other local issues before we let you go. Of course, that Torquay North petrol station, the front cover of the Surf Coast Times. It's such a big issue, petrol stations, it seems. It gets a lot of people talking about it. And obviously, planning must be one of the most difficult parts of being a councillor, you know, dealing with all the different stakeholders.
Petrol stations are a challenge because they obviously attract a lot of, throughput, so they can be noisy and they're open for long hours, so they've got to be in the right location. And I think we have a situation where you've got a residential area with a petrol station. It's not necessarily the right place. So where is the right place? And that is something that council has to work with potential proprietors to work out a best location. It'd be great to see more push towards alternative forms of fueling as well. Like, great to see more, come in and plug in for your electric car. And that's the way I think we'll be going in the future too, on a different matter. But.
Yes, and greyhound breeding, of course, that farm in Anglesey rejected. But also I think it goes to a broader issue, and that is that in New South Wales they're now about to ban greyhound racing, I think, from next year. Is that the direction that you see the other states going? Will we be following suit in Victoria, do you think?
It's an interesting issue. It's not one that I could predict, to be honest, because there's two sides to every argument. I mean, one side is you've got that economic push, the tourism angle to it, people's right to pursue their passion, and we do live in a democracy. But on the other hand, you have the animal must be cared for. There's obviously been some real issues in New South Wales on this. So I, at this point, do not know if it's on the state government's agenda. But in terms of a breeding farm, obviously there's concerns around amenity for neighbours, and also the noise factor and the care of those animals and the number that would be bred on the site. So they were the things, obviously, that were factored in the decision.
And finally, the Anglesey roundabout. What are your thoughts there? Because obviously that can be a bit of a traffic choke point, can't it?
Now, do you mean the roundabout near the new chocolatery, or do you mean the new development that's going to take place?
I believe
place?
It's the one going through the Great Ocean Road, isn't it, that causes a lot of a bottleneck? That's what I'm hearing. Yeah.
So what we have, there has been a roundabout built at Forest Road. And I know initially a lot of people were quite concerned about that because people don't necessarily embrace change. But I think that road, Forest Road, is becoming busier, and it's an intersection that I think the roundabout will help to stop accidents of some significance, yep, which have occurred at that site. And then as you go down the hill into Anglesey, there has been historically a bottleneck take place when people want to turn right into the shopping centre in Anglesey. Others want to go straight through, and there is a bottleneck there, particularly at high points in the tourism season.
Yes.
Now Vic Roads is starting, I think it is today, their upgrade of the road to try to reduce that congestion, but there are quite a few in the community that in the consultation process did not want those changes to be made, which is widening the road to the next, to the bridge and the roundabout. It's going to be including pedestrian lights, as far as I'm aware. And there is some doubt in the community about how effective it will be. But VicRoads is makes its decisions, and they will be rolling out the road upgrade. So we will wait and see. As council, we have tried our best to bring the community and VicRoads together and to help with a solution. It's time will tell whether it is going to be effective. Hopefully it will be.
Well, Libby, thank you very much for joining us this morning. We really appreciate it. It's been great to have you back with us again and talking about all of these issues. And we look forward to hopefully continuing to catch up in the lead up to the election.
Yeah, look, I really do appreciate the opportunity. It's always great to speak with you, and I look forward to an ongoing chat.
Thank you very much. Libby Coker there, now running as a candidate for Surf Coast Shire at the upcoming local government elections. We'll go to a break. After the break, we'll speak to James Taylor from the Surf Coast Times about some of the big issues that we were just speaking about with Libby Coker. That's coming up straight after this on The Pulse.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.